Hi, everyone. I'm Jordan Burgess, and this is Thinking Outside the Portfolio, our quarterly conversation on market updates with Fidelity's Klaus DeVille. Hi, Klaus. Happy summer. I hope you had a chance to get outside a bit.
Yes, Jordan. Hi, everybody.
So, Klaus, last time we talked, you were optimistic about where the economy was going. I know there's been rumbles of uncertainty out there from on again, off again, regarding inflation talks with the Fed and rate changes ahead. But are you still feeling optimistic?
Yes, Jordan. To me, the prospects still look really good. And it's very much unchanged from what we talked about last time. I believe this post-COVID boom could be one of the strongest one that many of us have experienced in our lifetime. And there are four factors sort of coming into this and coming together here. One is that sort of we are getting closer to reaching herd immunity. Sort of these vaccines have made a major difference. And by the way, I don't think this Delta virus strain is going to sort of interrupt this. So that's the first factor. Sort of we're getting this sort of virus more and more under control with the vaccines. The second factor is that there's obviously a lot of pent-up demand, but there are also pent-up savings. Because we were locked into the house over the last 15 months, if you look at the aggregated savings of Americans, they're about $2 trillion higher than before COVID. And that number before COVID was pretty steady for 10 years. So there's sort of pent-up savings here that can be spent. And I assume that a lot of this is going to be spent on things that we couldn't do over the last 15 months. Then there's obviously a stimulus package, the $1.9 trillion that the Biden administration has already approved. And there might even be an infrastructure package coming in the fall that looks possible right now on a bipartisan basis. And all of this sort of coming together should really lead to GDP growth. If you look at sort of Wall Street forecast right now, it's somewhere in the neighborhood between 6 and 8%. That's higher than many of us have experience in our lifetime.
So as you talk about the boom, and kind of on the back of those four pillars almost, the next question is always, so how long do you think it might last?
That is really the critical question. And it's the key to almost every decision from a portfolio construction perspective.
So why is how long it can last such an important question from a portfolio construction perspective?
So if you think about it, this is really ground zero. This question is really ground zero to a lot of issues. And there are sort of two camps out there. It's heavily debated internally. It's heavily debated at every Wall Street firm that I know. The question is how long this is going to last. And there's these two camps. There's this one camp that says the boom is coming, but it will only be short term. It's only a short term spike. Eventually, the fiscal stimulus is running out. These pent-up savings were not going to last. And then we are sort of back to sort of the world that we were pre-COVID, driven by our demographics, which are aging. And so this is just short-lived. And then there's this other camp who says, no, this is going to last a little bit longer. We are creating wage growth here. The stimulus package are going to last a lot longer. The infrastructure package is going to help. Employment is going to pick up. And this is going to become self-reinforcing and it's lead to sort of a much longer above average growth period. And so if you think about sort of what does it mean for each camp, if you're in the camp that believes that this spike is only short-lived, then you probably also believe that inflation is only transitory and that your investment should tilt to areas that can grow without a lot of help from the economy, because the economy eventually is going to moderate. And that would lead you to invest more, if history is a guide here, to more growth stocks, to more large caps, to sectors that are not very cyclical, like tech and healthcare. And from a fixed income perspective, you want to be long duration fixed income. If you're on the other camp and you believe this is going to last a little bit longer, then your view of all of this is very, very different. You probably think that inflation is going to be elevated for some time and it remains sticky. From an equity perspective, you want to tilt your portfolio probably more into areas that are more cyclical, that benefit from a stronger economy, which would be value stocks, it would be small cap, it would be cyclicals. And from a fixed income perspective, you want to be on the shorter duration side and just tips.
That all makes sense. So I'm sure our question, I'm sure our listeners are curious as to what camp you stand in and where are we headed next?
So let me just say up front that I don't think there's a whole lot of concrete data out there that leads you in any of those two directions. And the problem here is really that there are no historic comparisons, right? Sort of normally you look at sort of history and that gives you a guide of how this is going to play out. But if you think about it, how many global pandemics did we really have that had that massive fiscal stimulus, that Fed policies that is that loose, and an aging demographics? There are none. At least I can't remember it. So we are sort of really a little bit in the fog here, and the data is going to show us. What I'm thinking is I'm sort of splitting the baby in half, if you will. I'm thinking on the one hand that this is probably going to last a little bit longer from a boom perspective than the skeptics think. And this is not just a 2021 event. This is probably going to last way into 2022. But I also believe that sort of in the end, the demographics is probably take over again. That's sort of our destiny. That's a little bit of the history of the modern world economy, that demographics are driving everything. And we are aging demographics. And that's going to lead to probably slower growth in the long term.
Okay, so that gives us a pretty good idea from 30,000 feet. But what does all this mean from an asset allocation perspective?
So from an asset allocation perspective, let me sort of start with equities here first. I would overweight equities. I mean, that's sort of given where we are in the economic cycle, we are still early to mid-cycle. If you sort of think about sort of history is that an economic cycle is about 6 to 7 years, and that you in general get positive equity returns not every year, but on average, until you hit the next recession. And sort of given sort of where we are in the cycle, that's probably 4 or 5 years away from here. We also enter a period where GDP growth will be very strong. That should be supportive of equity prices, and it should be supportive of corporate earnings sort of kicking in here as well and growing quite nicely. And so bringing this sort of down to sort of a more of a micro level. So overweight equities, I think I would keep my overweight within the US. And sort of coming back to my earlier point, I'm sort of splitting the baby a little bit. I think you need a little bit of both. You need a little bit of growth and you need a little bit of value. Value for the current cyclical recovery and growth for the long-term outlook that is more moderate, where you need something that I believe can generate earnings growth and positive returns in times where the economy is not that strong. The reason why you have both already here, by the way, is sort of you might wonder sort of why not wait until you sort of you invest in growth here if the cyclical recovery is going to play out another 12 to 18 months. The reason for that is that you never know when the market is turning its attention to what's next, right? Just think back to sort of March of last year. I mean, the COVID lockdown had almost just begun, right? And there was no vaccine visible. The economy slowed down. We were all locked down, and the equity market turned up. And sort of most of my client conversations was, why is the equity market turning up? It doesn't make any sense, but the equity market sort of had figured out that eventually we are going to get this under control, and sort of had anticipated this sort of long before it actually happened. And that could happen here as well, that the equity market at some point is going to smell out during this post-COVID economic boom phase that I think we are going to get, that this is not going to last, and sort of this long-term destiny will be a more anemic growth. And so that's why you need both already. To drive even more concretely, what I would do is I would sort of pick what I believe is sort of the best parts of value and the best parts of growth. The best parts of value to me are small cap value and financials. Small cap value is the cheapest or relatively cheapest part of the value style boxes. And financials are actually the cheapest sector right now. And on the growth side, I would pick large cap growth and pair that with healthcare. Again, for valuation purposes, large cap growth companies are the cheapest ones on the growth spectrum, and healthcare stocks are the second cheapest sector, just after financials, who is the cheapest. So that would be my sort of domestic allocation. Briefly, to round the corner here, sort of to international equities as well. Again, I would overweight US equities, and I would sort of have sort of a neutral allocation to EM and diversified international. That would still be a relatively big allocation. I think they are going to benefit from getting COVID under control worldwide, a little bit more delayed. It could be actually that a lot of the reopening trade is still ahead of these countries, so that should be good. They are cheaper than we are. And sort of history has shown that if you are broadly diversified within equities, you get a lot of diversification benefits as well.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense. And so that gives us a good feel for the equity side. What about bonds?
So on the bond side, I would, similar to what I suggested last time, is I would sort of have my fixed income allocation barbelled. I would have part of my fixed income allocation sort of matching my very, very optimistic equity outlook, which is that the economy is sort of improving. And so you want to be in sort of credit sensitive areas that benefit from a better economy. Their credit risk goes down. They provide more income. And my favorite asset class here are probably floating rate notes. But sort of these are the kinds of areas that I would invest in it. And on the other side of sort of my barbell side, I would do exactly the opposite. Because something could go wrong, right? Something could be wrong. It could be wrong on that. So maybe the delta variation is becoming a very, very contagious. It cannot be contained by the virus. I don't think that's likely. The data doesn't seem to back this up, but it's possible. And then we have to sort of start over again. And so you always want to have something in your portfolio that provides diversification and some peace of mind for your clients. And so that would be investment grade bonds, that would be treasuries, that would be money market accounts, sort of anything that contributes to stability of your fixed income portfolio.
Got it. That's great. Appreciate those insights. So to wrap up, I know we mentioned it earlier, but let's just finish with a question on inflation, which is all over the news right now. How worried do you think our clients should be about inflation?
So this is my personal opinion. Again, sort of, I mentioned earlier that this is heavily debated within Fidelity and within Wall Street as well. I'm in the it is transitory camp, and sort of to me, if I think about inflation, there are sort of coming four bullet points to my mind. It's expected, it's priced in, it's transitory, and it's sort of eventually supportive of equity prices. Let's sort of bring this sort of down to a little bit. Expected and priced in. The bond market is expecting inflation to pick up in the short term, and it's expecting it to recede over the next couple of years. And so that's already priced into bond prices. And so if you go back to sort of 2 or 3 weeks ago, sort of in the middle of June, when we had the 5% inflation number coming out for May, the bond market didn't react at all. The bond market wasn't shocked by that numbers. You and I might have been shocked, but the bond market knew it was coming, it would be high, and it didn't react at all. So that's expected price. Then on the transitory front, I sort of talked already about that I'm in the camp that the GDP growth is going to last a little bit longer than the skeptics think, but eventually sort of the demographics are going to take over. And sort of if you have an aging workforce, that is normally deflationary, not inflationary. So that should sort of bring inflation back under control. And if you, again, sort of go with the bond market expects inflation to average out over the next 10 years at about 2.4%. That is, again, sort of not concerning. It's a lot less than it's now, and it's barely over the Fed's target of 2%. And which brings me to my last point, supportive for equity prices. If you sort of look historically, what kind of multiple has Wall Street put on the earnings number based on what kind of inflation regime you had? It turns out inflation around 2 gives you actually the highest multiple. The multiple there is between 17.5 and 18.1. It's the highest multiples that you could get. If you get more inflation, the multiples go down. And if you get higher inflation, the multiples go down. So that's really the sweet spot for equity. So I would not be that concerned about inflation. With the asterisk again, is that this is really the topic that sparks the most discussions, even within Fidelity here. And nobody really knows how this is going to play out because we are really in unprecedented territories.
Okay, well, appreciate the context and insight. And I think we can all live with that. As always, Klaus, thank you. It's great to get your perspective on things. And thanks to our listeners. Enjoy your summer, and we'll be back when the days are considerably shorter. I'm Jordan Burgess. Please join me for more episodes of Thinking Outside the Portfolio. Stay safe and be well.
Information presented herein is for illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of July 2021, based on the information available at that time, and may be changed based on market or other conditions. The opinions provided are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Investment decisions should be based on an individual's own goals, time horizon, and tolerance for risk. Nothing in this content should be considered as legal or tax advice, and you are encouraged to consult your own lawyer, accountant, or other advisor before making any financial decisions. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or guarantee against loss. Stock markets, especially foreign markets, are volatile and can decline significantly in response to adverse issuer, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Foreign securities are subject to interest rate, currency exchange rate, economic and political risks, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. The risks are particularly significant for funds that focus on a single country or region. In general, the bond market is volatile, and fixed income securities carry interest rate risk. As interest rates rise, bond prices usually fall and vice versa. This effect is usually more pronounced for longer-term securities. Fixed income securities also carry inflation, credit, and default risks for both issuers and counterparties. Fidelity Institutional provides investment products through Fidelity Distributors Company, LLC, clearing custody or other brokerage services through National Financial Services, LLC, or Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, members NYSE, SIPC. Reference number 986319.1.0.